January 27, 2021. It's a Lot for Pedro show. Watt for Pedro show. Happy Wednesday, last Wednesday of January 2021. Weird saying that, but Brother Matt at the Love Grotto, a couple miles south from Pleasure Point. I got a message from him. He's missing me. I'm missing him big time, but we're in quite quarantine mode. However, I'm not totally man alone because of the incredible Skype invention from them engineers in Estonia. I got bass brother Trevor Dunn. Welcome aboard. And, you know, we're talking to you from Brooklyn, making a Brooklyn Pedro Connect.
Yeah, I'm in Brooklyn.
Way into that. I should tell the people what they heard. We start off the show with Night in Tunisia. This is John Coltrane with Dizzy Gillespie, 1951, really young. And he's finding himself, but fuck, what a classroom to be in, Mr. Gillespie's. Okay. Trevor Dunn after that with the Boardwalk. Yeah. Boardwalk.
Oh, yeah.
There's the famous East Coast stuff. But you're not East Coast of your ridge. So, let's turn people onto your musical journey. What's your earliest musical recollection?
Wow. I think that would be at my parents' house. They both had a lot of records around. My mom, you know, was a pretty avid, has a really good jazz collection. My dad was into more, you know, Elvis and Tina Turner, stuff like that. But we also had a lot of these Walt Disney soundtracks. And I remember specifically this movie, Black Beauty, you know, about the horse.
Right.
And the theme, that song for some reason was, it's very dramatic and, it's kind of this jazzy 6/8 feel. It's kind of got heavy lyrics actually. It says something about,
the jazz waltz. 6/8.
Yeah. And the lyrics talk about how, you know, it's about this horse and how he knew the meaning of pain. Pretty heavy lyrics for a kid's movie, you know, but, that for some reason, that is one of the earliest songs in particular that I ever remember hearing that kind of affected me dramatically, you know, that gave me a feeling in my gut.
Ness Klein told me it was very controversial bringing in the 6/8 to jazz because it was all four on the floor shit. Yeah.
Right.
I was recording some Italian guy, some math rock 13/7 shit, or you know John Coltrane. But anyway, this pad with your parents, where was it?
Eureka, California.
Okay. So you're NorCal guy. A true NorCal. People say the Bay Area and the city, but that's kind of in the middle.
It is.
Now, in this pad with the Disney records and the Black Beauty drama, was there instruments?
I started on clarinet when I was probably in the fourth grade or something. That was, and that was my mom's clarinet. I actually originally wanted to play saxophone, but my parents weren't, you know, they didn't want to buy one and they weren't sure if I was going to stick with music or not. So they said, why don't you play this clarinet? So there was that clarinet. And then, my older brother started playing guitar. So, and he was getting into rock music. And so there was a guitar around for a while. And so, yeah, there were instruments in and out. At some point later, my parents got a piano just for us kids to mess around on. And,
did you have a lessons thing?
Yeah, I took.
Now, what was the guests on my show have had a lot of different experiences, and it kind of depends on the teacher, right?
Absolutely. My clarinet teachers were not that great, and that's one of the reasons I didn't stick with it. But then my first bass teacher was this guy named Larry Weber, who not a lot of people knew. He was kind of a fusion guitar player, and, He was amazing. He was really encouraging and he would, you know, he got me these Carole Kaye bassline books and I'd learn these, you know, these boogaloos and these blues lines and stuff. And then he would, you know, teach me the blues progression and then just wail over the top of it while I held it down. And I think that was probably the best kind of teaching I ever could have had.
Okay. I'm confused here because I thought we were talking about piano teachers.
Oh, no, no. I was
how did
about
we
my,
make the jump it, to the bass? How did? Of course, I want to get to this, how you got on the fucking bass, but for sure, what I got now in my mind is the licorice stick and then your brother's guitar and him getting into rock and roll. What was the first record you bought for yourself?
Oh, geez. Probably Cheap Trick Live at Budokan.
You know, when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money, so it's kind of trippy what you spend it on. What was the first gig you went and saw?
First, my first concert was Kiss at the Cow Palace when I was 11 years old.
Okay. We saw, me and D. Blue saw Kiss about four times before they even had a record out. And we only saw them once after the... Yeah, we thought the record was real slow compared to what we were seeing. But, okay, let's get back to that lesson thing. So, on the piano, you didn't have lessons?
I didn't start taking piano lessons until I was in college, actually. So that was much later. And that was kind of, that was when I was 18 or 19. And I was taking, I took a couple years of lessons at the university, Humboldt State University. And that was, you know, with like a real piano professor. So that was, you know, pretty, very kind of formal.
Academic, yeah, because this is part of a whole music program, not just the piano. It's probably a device to teach you harmony or shit.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
And let's back up. Let's get to this bass, this guy, a fusion guy, that would jam over you. Now, how did that happen?
He taught at the local music store, and I, you know, signed up for lessons right away. I got my first bass.
Yeah, but tell me about that. Why did you go looking for it? Did somebody make you play it? Like D. Boone's mom made me play bass. I didn't even know what the fuck it was.
right. You know, it's funny. I mean, my older brother was playing guitar, and he was really into Kiss and Elton John. He was always playing along to records really loud, and I would mess around on his guitar. And then at some point, I decided I wanted to play bass. And I remember my dad saying, "Why do you want to play bass? Why don't you play guitar? That's more in front." You know, he was. That was kind of his personality. He wanted me to, he thought it would be better if I was like playing a lead instrument up in front, but I didn't want to do that. But I don't think I even really understood what bass was. I just knew it was kind of similar to what my brother was doing, but different. And yeah, then I got my first bass for Christmas and I started.
What was that first bass?
It was called a Hondo.
Oh, I remember those Japanese. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crane had one. The bass man for a Tragic Comedy. And he, in fact, he was embarrassed it was a Hondo, so he put aluminum foil over the fucking headstock. But it was okay. It had DiMarzio pickup.
Yeah, this had like it was like a double cutaway. It was like this dark brown color.
Exactly. Same thing.
Yeah. That's funny. Never even heard of those before.
Okay. And what was your first amp?
My first amp was called, I don't know who made it. It was called VT, and it stood for Vibration Technology. And it had these, you know, aside from, you know, treble and bass knobs on it, it also had these five buttons, you know, country, jazz, rock.
Yeah, of course. You know, where would we be without that? Now, this teacher, this fusion guy, he would, like, give you a pattern. And, like, hold this down. Fucking freak out over it.
Yeah, he would. I mean, I already kind of knew how to read music a little bit because of, you know, my clarinet lessons.
Sure.
But
that's treble clef.
Yeah. But, I understood, like, rhythmic things. Sure, and that, so then I had to learn bass clef.
He would give
me these lessons where I'd learn these bass lines, you know, these Carole Kay licks. And then he would say, okay, now you got to play it in these three different, you know, keys, over these three different chords. And he would just wail over the top of it. And he was great. I remember the first lesson, he called me a badass. And that in itself was like so encouraging. I'm like, oh my God, he used the word badass.
I'm curious, since they were Carole Kay licks, did you use fingers or pick?
I think I started. That's a good question.
Because you know she's a pick lady. In fact, she has foam rubber between the body and the strings.
Ah, right. Yeah, I can't remember. I think I started with a pick, and then I had a that teacher moved away and I got another teacher who was also good. And I think he got me more into playing with my fingers. And then, and now of course I go back and forth.
Yeah. I was going to say that because some assholes try to say one is better than the other and it's all fucking vocabulary, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, fuck them. Okay. Some of my fellow bass people really got their heads up their ass about something. I want to play Nocturne number 6.
Okay.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Yeah, Nocturne number 6, Trevor Dunn. Started that chunk, brand new from Super Freak out of Milano, Italy. Formerly Bari. Sorry. Semiotic Squares. Semiotician, Giuseppe. Model Home, brand new out of DC album. Looking For is the name of the tune. It is great. Check it out. Hands Rotten out of Switzerland, drum guitar, and Whooper, or Whopperloo? Yeah, Whopper. Swiss know English better than I do anyway. Dale Crover, brand new record. Mo Clips, and you got a little experience with Dale Crover there, Trevor.
Yeah, nice.
Gareth Sager from a pop group with a brand new piano and saxophone record. Miniature number 19 is a tune. Leyden Jars, Abstract Armor. Maybe on more. Yeah, does England put a U there? Maybe it's love. Yeah. No, that's Amor with the R, out the R. You asshole. Fuck what? Bob's Brendan after that. Rasta Monkeys. A foodie from Osaka. Human. Elmo Kirkwood, son of Kirk Kirkwood, of course, for 2021. And finally, Sperm Church. a project Trevor Dunn that put the baby online. And, okay, so what about the shit after school where you got the basement band, the bedroom band, the garage band? Did you do that?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the other thing about my first teacher was he, you know, he was a guitar teacher. And so, you know, his other students were guitar players. And one of his students who played guitar had a brother who played drums. And I immediately, within a couple weeks, I think, of my first lesson, I was in a band with those two guys. And, you know, just my mom would drive me up to their house, cause I was, you know, I couldn't drive yet. And, we jam and we started, you know, finding, you know, our affinities for music, for bands and learning cover songs and all that
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious. You copied off records at first, but did you write your own, try writing your own too?
Eventually. Yeah.
And what was this band called?
It eventually became, we went through probably like 10 different names, but it eventually was called Gemini.
All right. That was a two-man spaceship, right? My papa's a Gemini. Yeah, it's also a collection of stars in the sky. It's like two twin brothers. So did this band do gigs, or was it just a prac band?
Yeah, we started doing, you know, we played at the...
Tell me about the first gig, first Gemini gig.
Oh man, it was so, let's see. Let me think about that. I think our first gig was after we were in high school. So then we went back to our junior high and played, you know, in the gym or something. And, I remember playing Working Man by Rush, which has a little, there's like a little bass break.
Well, if you're playing a trio, you got to be in the Rush, right? Nobody says Cream. It's always, I always get told Rush.
Yeah, yeah. I think Cream was too deep for me at that point.
But was the gig a success?
Yeah. People were screaming and yelling and excited to see a band, and that was encouraged us, you know. And
Now, after high school, you go to college, to music school in college, right?
Yeah.
What happens there?
Well, I, you know, after high school, I didn't know what the heck I was going to do. And so I thought, well, I guess I'll major in music. You know, I didn't even really know what that meant. And I kind of thought I was going to be, studying electric bass and learning, you know, learning more about jazz, which I was kind of doing, you know, my last couple of years in high school. And, I show up at university and they hand me a bow and a cup of rosin and they're like, all right, you're learning classical technique.
And, stand up.
I started playing upright and I didn't even plan on that. It just kind of, you know, I just kind of went with it.
And I think that's called arco.
Yeah, exactly. I remember one of my first lessons, you know, I was using electric fingering to play a major scale, and that teacher was like, nope, that's not how it's done here.
Yeah, you gotta really work the fucking open strings with an upright.
And also not use your third finger, you know,
right.
On your left
or hand. Or you make it together, right?
Yeah.
With the pinky. You know, I tried in the 90s. I ended up doing a 7-inch for Kill Rock Stars, but it was too fucking hard, especially where the body meets the neck and your hand has to turn the other way.
Right, yeah, and then you have to go into thumb position. Yeah, it's a completely different instrument. I didn't.
It's a giant fucking violin without a chin part.
Yeah, totally.
No, they did that, I think, to keep the temper for the symphony, you know, for the big orchestra. You know why, you know, you got a bitchin' old P bass, right?
Yeah.
And you know why Leo called it that?
Say that again?
You know why Leo called it that?
A precision? No, why?
Because it's got frets. He didn't play. Well, he did a little sax and some piano, but it was for his country buddies had to tour tying a doghouse to the top of station wagons.
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah, because it had frets, right? But actually, Rickenbacker had a bass mandolin, so he wasn't the first. But let's give Leo the credit. So, now, you ain't playing with them high school guys anymore. No more Gemini band?
No, that band kind of evolved a couple different ways. And actually, before I was at university, I'd already started Mr. Bungle.
You started that? That's your band?
That was, I co-founded it with, yeah, two of my buddies, yeah.
Okay. And how that happened? Let's start a band like that?
Yeah, after Gemini, you know, I was in a couple other bands and we were all metalheads at that point. And I met, my brothers, you know, Trey Spruance and Mike Patton, and we just had a lot of things in common. And we just got together with a drummer and that was it.
But it was a drummer. There wasn't like a fourth guy. You know, like the first Clash record, right? There's no fucking drummer. Right? He's like I think they even changed his name. He's like Tory Crimes. He ended up a chiropractor, somebody told me.
Wow.
But, okay. What was the first Mr. Bungle gig like?
We rented out it was called the Bayside Grange, you know, it was one of these...
Grange Hall,
yeah.
Yeah, Grange people was like a union for farmers because the railroads were so fucked to them.
Ah, I never knew that, actually. Wow.
Well, it's from 100 years ago and shit.
Yeah. Well, this was, you know, it was in a small, it's not even really, it's like a village between Eureka and Arcata. You basically drive off you take this exit in the middle of the freeway and you drive off into this field and there's the Grange. And we set up this gig with, I don't know, probably four other bands and invited our friends. And that was the gig. It was, yeah, a tiny little place.
Did you play last?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's your gig. Fuck you.
Yeah, it's our gig.
Politically, though, I hate playing last. We call it the broom. You know, you got the broom, you got to do cleanup.
That's right. Well,
but you learn that later, right?
Clean up.
Look, we're at the end of the first hour, 2021, January 25 edition of Watford Pedro Show. Special guest Trevor Dott. Hold tight for hour two. January 25, 2021. It's the second hour of the Watford Pedro Show. Thank you.
But that evil, wicked man, the world is better off. His ashes gone to ash, and now his dust gone back to dust. Now you see I'm old and gray, won't be around much longer. Will I go to heaven or to hell? These things aren't guaranteed. But either way, all I can say is I did the only thing I could, and you won't hear me tell you that I'm sorry for the deed. Cause what I did, I'll testify, had to be done, just as sure as there's a rising. Hey, rising and the setting of the sun.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show, the second hour, with the song that Trevor did not title. The Heisenberg Uncertainty Principle from Toyn Verbruggen and Trevor Dunn, which I guess is some European friends you got to record with. And then Sam Bennett after that from Tokyo with the ballad of Molly Branson. Sam Locke Ward from Iowa City, Retreat Into Your Mind. See you in Tijuana. Radio Repricity. Notice I didn't say Tijuana. That's like Aunt Josephine. Come on, people. No fucking A there. Quit imagining it. Dr. Herman Green from Memphis. We lost him in November. Beautiful man. Up to 89 on his sax. Inspiration. Glimpse Trio after that. I Got This Thing. I think they're out of Cleveland originally. Two of them. And then King Buzzo, the Melvin guy with Trevor. I'm glad I could help out. Which is a fucking great sentiment. You know, we need more musicians with that kind of attitude, Trevor. You know? And said, what about me? I'm glad I could help out. I could aid in a bit. Okay. So, I know with Mr. Bungle, is this where you do your first, like, recording stuff and then, like, tours?
Yeah, well, I hadn't toured yet, but that was the first band where we really were like, you know, we made a demo of original music and we were just writing our own stuff and doing gigs locally. And then a couple years later, I think we did our first gig in San Francisco, which was our first out of town gig, which was a total nightmare. You know, it was the classic, you know, we had to load up fire escape, you know, in the middle of North Bay where there was no parking and we were just freaked out of our minds and no one showed up to the gig. We drove all the way down.
Oh, we call those character builders.
Exactly.
I should have a character about the size of Empire State Building. but anyway, you know, a farmer would tell you, right? If you want a good crop, use a lot of manure, so fucking bring it, right?
Exactly.
Okay, where did you record that demo?
The first demo we recorded ourselves in a garage or something. Our guitar player, Trey, had a Tascam 4-track tape machine, you know, and we
cassette.
Cassette, and I think we recorded the bass and drums with one microphone,
of course.
And the vocals got another track, and the guitar solos got another track. So,
you know, the Urinals, they made that first record. Well, the amplifier had two inputs, so of course you put the bass in the guitar. And Kevin's drums had paper heads. You know, hey, it was more economical. I'm curious about the composition. Were you composing yet?
Well, yeah. I mean, I had a great music theory class in high school, you know, when I was 18, or maybe even 17. It might have been my junior year. And I mean, that's kind of unheard of now, music theory in high school, you know.
Yeah,
but
that's bitching.
Yeah. And that teacher was great. And that's, you know, he got us writing music. I remember the first composition project we had was we had to write for a desk.
That's great. Yeah, but that's fucking cool. What's his name, man? That's great.
Don Minkey.
Thank you, Mr. Minkey, because, man, I've had people, you know, can play like motherfuckers, but you got to have a sheet of music in front of them.
Yeah.
And so this did, was he like, did he get you, besides composition, into improvise?
I don't know if he did, but then the I was in like band class, and that teacher, Dan Horton, was also really important for me, and he got us into, he's the one who got us into Charlie Parker and, you know, listening to jazz and learning how to, you know, come up with bass lines.
Paul Chambers.
Yeah, exactly.
Not just bass lines, but verses, bridges, choruses, intros, outros. What about the bass as a composition? I was going to get into this later anyway, but the bass, you know, because Mr. Mingus, he composed on a piano.
Right.
Were you, what were you using? Clarinet? Liquor stick?
Yeah. No, actually, I think, and I still, to this day, I still tend to compose more on guitar.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't really have any guitar chops. I mean, I still don't, but.
No, but you got chords, you got harmonic content that the bass don't have. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And you got that clarity in the higher register where you can hear these chords. So
that's why Nels loves my things on the bass, because it gives him all kinds of room to invent that for himself. Look, yeah. I want to play The Empty Glass Has a Name.
Thank you. I just had a dream that was kind of symbolical. The dream was that I was on a train and I went in the wrong direction. I don't know how I did that, but I could see out the windows that I was going the wrong way. I had to get off, but I had too much stuff with me. I had to collect all my stuff together. I don't even know how I got on the train with that much stuff. That part wasn't in the dream. But I couldn't get all the stuff I had with me all together to get off the train and go back the other way. So the train kept on going with me on it, going in this other direction. And that's quite symbolic of life, you know? I feel I do collect some experiences, and they give me some sort of knowledge. Some people might call it wisdom, but I'm not sure about that. But it is knowledge and experience. I've got a lot of that.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro Show. Started that chunk of music out with Trevor Dunn's Trio Convulsant with the Empty Glass has a name. Then Morty with No Other Girl out of Poland. David Greenberger and Prime Lens with Impedimenta. He just asked me to do some bass. Cavell. Dulce Drone. Bada Futa. Fuata. Yeah, that's Gaelic and I fucked up. They're out of Belfast. Sorry for butchering your words, people. Waka Waka Kingdom. Brother Shige was a live version of Sugar Pills. And finally, Mad Love. The Art of Denial. What is Mad Love?
Mad Love, you mean the concept?
Or the proj, yeah.
That was a rock band I put together in 2009, and it's, you know, it was actually the first kind of really rock band of my own that I had where I was 100%, I wrote all the music and I put the band together. That band didn't really, we didn't do very many gigs, and I would love to revisit it at some point, but, I'm really kind of proud of that, the writing I did on that record. So, I might be singing a little bit on that, but it's the first record I made where I actually sang lead on one song.
Oh yeah. So you broke the water. What about Trio Convulsant?
That's a project that I still have with, that's with Mary Halverson on guitar and Chess Smith. And,
great drummer, man.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite drummers. He's also on the Mad Love record. So,
oh, he is. Who else was in that band?
The singer was Sonny Kim. Korean singer, yeah. And Hilmar Jensen, Icelandic guitar player.
Okay.
I also wasn't very smart about putting that band together. The guitar player lives in Iceland, the singer lived in Korea at the time.
Well, like these days, trade files over the internet. Internet's not all bad, people.
Yeah.
You don't have to just spread QAnon shit. You can trade files and make music. And maybe these were from your Brooklyn days, too. It's very cosmopolitan.
Yeah. Right?
Because there comes a point where you leave California for New York, Brooklyn, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, tell us.
Oh, I see. Yeah, 2000 is when I moved. I lived, after I left Humboldt County, I lived in San Francisco in the 90s, essentially. And then in 2000, I moved to New York, and you know, I was just a little bit, I don't know. I was a little bit too content musically in San Francisco. I was working a lot. I was playing a lot of jazz gigs and restaurants and, you know, occasionally touring with Mr. Bungle, but I wasn't really being pushed in the music scene there like I wanted to be. And then I had friends in New York who encouraged me to move out here. So that's what I did.
Yeah. And there's a lot going on there, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because you got people coming from the rest of the country to go there, so there's a special kind of energy.
Yeah.
I mean, the city's got some of that, but nothing like Brooklyn, Manhattan, I guess now Bronx and Spanish Harlem. But people are moving all over, right, because of the high rent. How was it when you went there in 2000? I mean, the monies. Well, the city's a lot of monies, too, though.
Yeah, I mean, every musician I knew when I moved here lived in Brooklyn, and because it was cheaper, you know, Manhattan was kind of out of range. I lived in, man, my first apartment in New York in Brooklyn was such a piece of crap. I could hear the mice in the walls, you know, I'd slam my fist against the wall and I could hear the sheetrock crumbling inside.
The thundering herd. but man, there's a lot of people. I know Nels told me about when he moved there, you know, all the open, you know, he tried to get free music going down here in SoCal for years with his brother Alex, but when he got there, buttloads of connects and stuff like that, and there's nothing like it. We're at the end of the second hour, January 25, or is it 27? Yeah. 2021. Did you want Peter, so special guest? Trevor Dunn, hold tight for hour three. January 27, 2021. It's the third hour of the Walk for Pedro Show.
If you could be the one in that, would it be the best? Imperfect world that I love, you take my mother, only 7 years older than I am now. Imperfect world that I love, you give me beautiful sons she will never know. Imperfect world, you give us souls that feel the edge of loss and joy, cutting daily so we never forget. Imperfect world, your roads do not rise to meet us. We stand to meet them, a wavering gaze, dimly comprehending.
Watch for Pedro Show. Melody, no. IV4 from Shelley Bergen and Trevor Dunn. Then Crane with his dance version of Scientific Proof. Imperfect World by Phil Venable. Archaic Volumes from Fatso Jess and Mario Lali and his brother on bass, right? John Dietrich from Deerhoof. 09. Paul Motion. Great drummer, man, we lost. Wednesday's gone. So is Brother Paul. Blue and C Minor from... Now, is this project called Endangered Blood?
Yeah.
Okay, and then the guys in it is Jim Black, Trevor Dunn, Oscar Noriega, and Chris Speed, right?
That's right, okay. Yeah.
And then how'd that come? Is that one of your New York kind of connect thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are all guys who I didn't meet until I moved here to New York. They all knew each other. They kind of... Chris and Jim were from Seattle originally, and Oscar's from Tucson, and those guys knew each other up in Boston in the 90s when they were all going to school up there, and then we met, we kind of all lived in the same neighborhood for years before we would hang out before we even really started playing music together, and which is such a typical New York thing, you know. It's like, hey, why don't we start a band, you know?
Were they at Berkeley in Boston?
I believe that Jim was. I think Chris was at NEC.
No. I asked that to ask this other question. Did you ever want to think, man, I should have went to Berkeley?
Earlier I was talking about, after high school, I didn't know what the heck I was going to do. And I remember I did get I got an application form for Berkeley, and I was considering it. And then I just, I didn't know enough about jazz then. And I realized looking at that application that I was probably never going to get in. So, and also it was a little bit, it was still a little bit scary for me to the idea of moving out, moving to another town. I never traveled at all. So. I just lived at home and went to a small university instead. But yeah, I considered it.
Some people tell me it's more for the connects than the theory.
Yeah, I made the connects later.
Now tell me about this Shelley Bergen 4 proj.
That's a duo project. She's a pedal harp player. She's actually out in L.A. now. If you ever need a harp player and. Yeah. Like pedal harp, you know.
Zena Nels has got a buddy, right? Zena Parkins?
Yeah, Zena Parkins. Yeah. They've actually, her and Shelley have done some work together, I think.
Super. Okay. There's nothing like that instrument. Isn't it fucking beautiful?
Yeah, and it's, man, it pairs really well with upright bass. Her and I had this duo project for a while, and we made 2 records and did a tour that we booked ourselves in the southeast. It was great. We loaded up my Subaru with her harp and my bass, and we went on the road for 2 weeks and improvising. It was great.
Bitching. You told me you like to compose on the guitar, and I'm going to play this tune, Melody for Conga Bass with String Quartet. Now, how do you write a piece like that on the guitar?
That, actually, I guess I probably did not write on guitar.
Just a guess.
Yeah. I actually wrote that piece when I was in college and was really kind of getting into composition and studying strings. And, so that was the first thing I ever actually wrote for, just for upright bass and then learning how to write for a string quartet.
Yeah, bitchin'. Let's listen.
Thank you. Okay, Jimmy, you're freaking me out.
Thank you. for my soul. I'm a coward who wants to yell. I'm a warrior who lost the war, but still I want to fight. I'm a drunkard at the bottom of the well. I'm a diver who hunts for pearls inside the heart.
Peter, so last music for this edition, melody for contrabass with string quartet. Yeah, first piece from Trevor Dunn. You know, my first tune, well, I only wrote one before Minuteman Reactionaries, and it was called Mr. Bass, King of Outer Space, and it was about playing a bass solo and blowing the rest of the band. Obviously, some issues I was addressing there.
That's true. I love it.
I can't even remember the music or the words or anything, but I remember, you know, the basic plot.
Yeah.
It's for shame. And we had Sean Lennon with Jimmy's Drum, The Dwarf and the Horse from Sleep Party People, March Part 3 from You Who Do Right featuring Jasmine Trails, Bottom of the Well from Maggie Bjorklund, and finally, the Nels Klein Singers.
Yeah.
Which you've served aboard, right? The Pleather Patrol. The Pleather People is like plastic kind of leather.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good if you're sweaty and you sit on a couch made of that shit. or conk out on it, even better. Yeah. So when did you get that old P-Bass?
I bought that thing in, let's see, probably 97 from a place in Berkeley, California called Univibe, a store, which was a really cool kind of vintage store back then. Doesn't exist anymore, of course. But I remember I've been playing I have this five-string Alembic bass that I've had for years, and that was kind of my main bass for a while, and it, for some reason, I just all of a sudden wanted a four string again, and wanted to get back to that. And I thought, man, I want a P bass. I just want one. And so I went to this store and they had two, and I tried them both out, and I liked this one, and now it's kind of my main bass. I mean, it has been for, well, 20 years, I guess. But
great sound. And what year is it?
75.
Is it 3-bolt or 4?
It's 4.
Okay. Because there's some 70s that are 3-bolt. And, of course, Watt yanks them out of tune, pulling too hard on. A jazz bass. It was Swamp Ash, too. It must have weighed like 10 pounds. It's heavy. Heavy is. What about recording bass? Like right now in this situation, are you trading files? Are you doing stuff like that?
A little bit, not a ton. I've done a couple things. This drummer Brian Chase out here just started a new cassette label, and he's doing these compilations where he asks 4 different people to record some stuff, and then he puts out a limited run of cassettes. And so I did one. He did the first one. Just a few months ago, and it was me and 3 other bass players. So each of us, I just, you know, did 3 improvisations essentially. But I record here at home. I've got a good microphone and a good preamp, and I use Logic and I can get a pretty good recording.
So have you been composing?
Yeah, actually I'm writing for another Trio Convulsant record actually. So sitting here with my guitar and pencil and writing notes down.
So, let me ask you: when you compose, do you envision the piece completed?
No, I usually start. I mean, sometimes I have a general idea about it, like, oh, it needs to be up tempo or something really general like that, or you know, maybe it's time for a ballad or something, or you know. But I sit down and I just start picking away at ideas and scraps, and it kind of develops as it goes, you know, as I'm writing it. And you know, I may write a whole, the other day I wrote something, I spent hours, and then I finished with it, and I thought, you know what, this sucks, I'm throwing it out.
Well, I ask that because sometimes, well, lots of times when I write on the bass, I'm on purpose not knowing, wanting to know what it's going to sound like. It's more like I'm building a diving board or a launch pad to see what the collaborators, the co-conspirators are going to do with this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like to, especially with the Trio Convulsant, there's a room for improvisation, so I want other people to contribute, you know. It's funny, what you just said makes me think of a John Cage quote. He said, "I don't write what I hear, I write in order to hear my music."
Yeah, well, he's all about context.
Which
makes sense, you know. It's not like you have to explain it, but context is kind of important. I just ask, you know, I love the idea of bass players being composers, drummers being composers.
Yeah.
I just like this because they're coming from not a traditional place to compose.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, for me, I do so much work as a sideman, it's hard to have the time to write. You know, I'm usually learning someone else's music.
Learning somebody else's stuff, right. What do they call that? Sideman-itis.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to watch out. But life is about taking turns, so I'm so glad that you get a chance to fucking be a composer, Meister.
Right on.
It's been a huge honor to have you aboard, Brother Trevor. And when you get some... This new trio music out, will you come back on the show and we can talk about it? Because I know you probably wrote for these guys. You know these guys.
Yeah. I would love to. I'm totally honored to be a guest on your show. I love your show. You've been a long time, man.
Oh, man. Big respect back. People, it's been the January 27th, 21, hard to say it. Just a while, Peter. Show. Keep your powder dry.